Okay, thank you, Michelle. And as he said, apologies for Hans, who wasn't able to be here. I'm going to be following quite closely agenda paper number 2, which sets out the major points. So our major projects at the moment, as most people know, are insurance contracts and leases. With insurance contracts, we've been having lots of outreach and engagement with our constituents, and we're reaching tentative conclusions, we have reached tentative conclusions on the contracts with without participating features, and we're working hard on contracts with participating features. The plan is that we'll continue discussing those issues for the rest of this year, October, November, December meetings, and we are hopeful that by that stage it should be sent away for drafting and the insurance contracts standard issued sometime in 2016, probably a little bit later in 2016 because it's quite a drafting task. It's after 13 or 14 years, there's a lot to write down. The project has been delayed, and it's become clear that the mandatory effective date will be after the 1st of January 2018, probably January 2020. Now, this has given insurance companies, they tell us, a problem with having to adopt IFRS 9 financial instruments on the 1st of January 2018 and not being able to adopt the insurance contracts standard at the same time. So the board had extensive discussions about that in September. We feel that there are some things the insurance companies themselves could do, and that was set out in the papers we reviewed. We then had a look at what's called the overlay approach. And the overlay approach would permit an entity to adjust profit or loss and other comprehensive income to remove from profit and loss the effect of newly measuring financial assets at fair value through profit and loss in accordance with the new standard IFRS 9. And we felt that that would be a help. We also discussed deferring the effective date of IFRS 9 for an entity that issues insurance contracts if that activity, the activity of issuing those contracts, is predominant for the reporting entity. And we have a fairly high limit for what predominant means. So it means almost all of your business. We have decided in December to proceed with an exposure draft to amend the existing insurance contract standard in respect of those two approaches, the overlay and the deferral. And that will be presented to us in October, the exposure draft, and we're hopeful that it'll be passed and issued as soon as possible, but certainly before the end of this year. With respect to leases, we finished our deliberations, our re-deliberations, March 2015. It is being brought back for some sweep issues and for an effective date, but the major decisions have been made, and standard is currently expected to be issued in the last quarter of this year, i.e. the quarter that we're in, and it's more likely than not to be December in that part of the quarter. So that's insurance contracts and leases. We had finalised deliberations on the conceptual framework and published an exposure draft in May. That is still out for comment, and we extended the consultation time at the request of a number of our constituents by 1 month to give them a little bit more time. So it'll be the end of this year when the consultation comes in. Then we'll be considering that, the responses that we've had, and taking it forward. The latest date I've heard, if it all goes well, for issuing the final form of the conceptual framework would be sometime in the beginning of 2017. We're making good progress with our disclosure initiative. It's a portfolio of projects being undertaken with the aim of improving the effectiveness of disclosures and financial reporting out It's important, those words. It's improving the effectiveness. This does not mean, and I think it was mentioned in our discussions last night, does not mean that we're going to cut out 80% of disclosures. We're looking at it in a holistic way. We hope it'll lead to some rationalisation, the whole series, but the aim is to improve the effectiveness, not to just get rid of disclosures. It's the principles of Disclosure Project is the cornerstone of this initiative, and we hope to publish a discussion paper on that in the first quarter next year. So work on it is quite well progressed. And finally, our research program is progressing satisfactorily despite a large pool of projects. We think that some of those projects can be completed quickly and may not lead to standard setting activity. They all vary in size and complexity, which they'll meet or reach major milestones at different times. And of course, the size and complexity of our research program is one of the questions that we ask about in our agenda consultation, which I'll come to now, actually. We issued a request on the agenda consultation. We issued a request for views on 11th of August 2015. It's open for comment till the end of the year, and we hope to be able to consider the agenda consultation in parallel with the trustees considering the structure and effectiveness review, because there is some crossover on those two, and it would be efficient, I think, for us to be looking at both at more or less the same time. Engagement strategy is the next topic. Part of our strategy to develop a single set of high quality, understandable, enforceable, and globally accepted accounting standards, it's important we have an effective engagement strategy with all stakeholders, especially the primary users, i.e. investors and analysts. In December last year, we launched the first phase of the Investors in Financial Reporting Program. It was created with the support of some of the world's leading asset managers and owners. The program is designed to foster greater investor participation in the development of IFRS, something we've been striving for years and years, and I think we make slow but consistent progress in that regard. We're not as far as we'd like to be at this stage. That program, the Investors in Financial Reporting, has been developed to further extend investor participation in our outreach activities by specifically encouraging greater involvement from the buy-side community. We've had positive reactions to this initiative with support from the investment community and other stakeholders. We're going to do a review of that program at the end of the year. Just moving on to how IFRS is progressing globally, we continue to assess our progress by developing individual jurisdiction profiles about the use of IFRS, and I should say those profiles are on our website and people are able to go and look country by country and in total if they want to. In the last quarter, we've updated several country profiles. We've completed them for 140 jurisdictions, including all the G20 jurisdictions. Of these 140, 116 require IFRS for all or most domestic publicly accountable entities. And extending that work, we've continued to gather data on the use of the IFRS taxonomy, and our Japanese office has been assisting us in that regard. We have an interest in having our standards applied consistently around the world, and we're taking various steps to try and achieve that consistency. As reported at the last meeting, the Joint Transition Resource Group for Revenue Recognition has continued to be useful in aiding entities to make a smooth transition to the new standard. We have another meeting of that group early in November. To date, I think we haven't got a lot of issues to consider. Normally it's an all-day meeting. I think it'll be half a day or less this time. So that's a very good trend. We're very pleased that we seem to be, you can never be totally confident, but we seem to be reaching the end of the line. And we'll wait and see. We're not making announcements that we're going to wind it up or anything like that, but we'll wait and see what comes through as we go forward. It's been a very interesting group, and we've done it by video across the Atlantic, Jim Croker and myself jointly chairing, and it's worked okay. I've been quite pleased. In July, we published an ED on targeted clarifications to the revenue standard. The wording of FASB's clarification and our wording is not exactly the same, but we think they lead to the same result. And certainly that's our goal, and we've been working very well with FASB in that regard, the staff and in the Joint Transition Review Group. Resource group. We have another transition resource group for impairment of financial instruments, and it met last month. It, of course, is not a joint one with FASB because we have different impairment criteria. So it's just being run by ourselves, and they discussed a number of issues, and so far don't have any changes to make to the standard, but they've found the discussions useful in getting everybody onto the same page. They'll continue to exist and hold future meetings as well. Having mentioned the two transition resource groups, I should say that we don't see this as a standard procedure going ahead. It should be decided on a case-by-case basis as to whether we need such a group. And our next decision, I guess, will be on leases. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I've completed the report.
Thank you, Jan. Any questions on this report or comments? This has been discussed extensively during this session, so I will hand over to Jim Quigley.